they owned by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, in studio with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we look at a collective crisis. The signs are everywhere in a fragmented society incapable of civil dialogue and unable to solve its growing problems. Our shared crisis is twofold. First, a crisis of social disconnection. Second, a crisis of impaired imagination. Both are fed in part by a third crisis, unleashed by the digital revolution and problem-focused news. That's the words of today's guests, Ken Burrows and Amber Yang, as we talk about what to do about these crises, our collective crisis in constructive journalism, growing the good and possible on today's Project Censored Show. Stay with us.
Think about crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, not just problem-focused journalism or solutions-based journalism, but today we look at our collective crisis and constructive journalism, growing the good and possible. We are joined today by Ken Burrows and Amber Yang, who, along with Bethany Surface, co-authored a chapter for Censored 2020 of the same title. Ken Burrows, of course, no stranger to the Project Censored audience, has been with us for quite some time, contributing to numerous books. He's been an educator and consultant for more than 30 years, teaching holistic health studies at San Francisco State University since 1991. He's the founder and director of the Holistic Health Learning Center, a unique interdisciplinary library and community action center at the university. He's a member of the Media Freedom Foundation board and oversees Project Censored. And of course, this is our national effort to educate the public about media literacy. And Ken Burrows has been working on constructive journalism and solutions journalism and many, many other elements of journalism we don't see in the corporate media for a long time. And it is a delight to welcome him back today. Ken Burrows, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you, Mickey.
Our next guest today, co-author of this chapter, is Amber Yang. Amber Yang is a restorative justice and wellness coordinator at Novato High School. She also has a bachelor's degree in psychology with a minor in holistic health, and she served as co-president of Project Censored San Francisco State University affiliate. Amber Yang has been an educator for the San Francisco Unified School District as a paraprofessional for at-risk students with trauma and intensive emotional needs. She is currently pursuing a graduate degree in organizational development at Sonoma State University. Amber Yang, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Mickey.
Welcome
back. Nice to be here.
Welcome back to the program. I want to mention the third co-author is Bethany Surface, who graduated from San Francisco State University with a bachelor's in psychology and a minor in holistic health. She was co-president of the Project Censored Affiliate Club there for 2 years. Bethany is not with us today, but I definitely wanted to note that she is co-author with Ken and Amber of this wonderful contribution to Censored 2020. This is chapter 9 in our book this year. It's our collective crisis and constructive journalism, growing the good and possible. So Ken and Amber, let's start off historically with some context. And as our listeners will discover, and anybody that might be reading along at home, if they've got a copy of the book, this is clearly something that you've been working on for some time. These concepts, these ideas, and you have wonderfully fused them in this publication. You've been doing a lot of public talks on it and conferences. From what I have seen, it's been received very well, and I have been using the chapter in my classes, and it's been received really well. So I'm excited to have you both here. Could you kick us off a little bit with the background and what led you to focus on this direction toward constructive journalism? And we'll define all that, too, of course, along the way. But
we've been, as you say, talking about this, thinking about this for years. Noticed over the years that a problem-focused news versus what we're calling now a possibility-focused journalism or news really sets up, over time, an imaginal crisis, we're calling it. It's part of a threefold crisis we're seeing within the news system. This so-called news crisis is fed by this imaginal crisis, and this is what I'd like to talk about, is at least the starting of this conversation. Then I believe Amber's got something to add as well. We have a so-called negativity bias that's inherent. It's a biological term. We tend to be really trapped in ways of looking at life that are negative, in a sense that we've had to be threat aware. we evolved to be fearful, since it really helped keep our ancestors alive. Our minds and our behavior are really shaped by threats, both real and unreal. We try to predict whether there's something that might harm us, and then our behavior needs to change to match, to be protective. So this fear bias, this negativity bias, right through our biology down to our behavior, sets up a particular way of being in the world that helps us really overvalue things that we're afraid of and undervalue things that actually that lead to hope and creative possibility. So that's the starting point. Just knowing this, the value of seeing this in play, means that most of our news is about what we fear. It also affects journalism. Journalists, basically, if it bleeds, it leads. There's a prevalence of a tragedy and crisis in our headlines, so that we increasingly, it contributes to a cycle of cynicism and, mm-hmm. and disengagement among people.
Yeah, Nolan Higdon and I just actually wrote an op-ed called Scandalgate that looks at this cycle in the news, how we just kind of go from one scandal to another. In American politics, Watergate is the original gate. And then since then, anything that's kind of a political scandal gets the suffix gate attached to it. And anytime that happens, the media runs, runs to cover it. And they look at the negativity and they look at the corruption. Interestingly enough, they don't always do anything about it, but they're attracted to the drama, the theater, the way they can negatively slant any of these kind of stories. And that leaves people high and dry, which is what you all are. You.
Your original question was how we even came to be, and I was co-president for the Project Censored as of State Affiliate for 2 years with Beth, and we started off with this question of how do we feel when we consume mainstream media, what comes up for us? And a big thing was stress, fear, anxiety, and a big one, disengagement. And so part of our meetings were really talking about how can we really shift that. And while I was co-president, I was working on my bachelor's degree in psychology, and a big focus of mine was positive psychology, just this inquiry and this idea about how do individuals and communities heal and thrive. And so this big question came up of how can our media and journalism, how can we actually reflect that into what we see every day? So that's what we started building on. And then I started doing a lot of research around constructive stories, stories that had a positive narrative that at first was solution-based. We were really into this idea of solutions, 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 and then realized that that was only a piece of the puzzle.
Well, so Chase Palmieri, do you want to jump in here?
I guess my first question would be, a big role of news is holding the powerful accountable and therefore usually pointing out problems. So I'm guessing that what you're saying is that we need to balance it with constructive journalism and solutions journalism. Do you think that those need to be either through separate networks? One network is covering just positive news and the other one is focused on problems. How do you actually see this idea manifesting, if it would?
Well, first of all, framing it as this, what we're calling problem-based news. The other would be what we name is possibility-oriented news. So we'll go into greater depth about what these two choices are. And we have, in fact, what we're calling an expanded media literacy model. So, yes, we need to focus on critical media and critical thinking for appropriate examination of all media and analyzing it, to really understand the basic questions of why was this produced, for what reasons, with what impacts in mind, what money is involved, what outcomes are being sought by the production of the media. But we also need to really be oriented to how do we recognize that to be threat aware really dominates our thinking, and it ends up leading to lots of cynicism from the reader and also the journalist, that what we're calling this hope gap. It's a serious problem, this idea of constantly looking for perceived threats. And that means we can often overestimate those threats. We can also be underestimating our resources and our possibilities if our focus is so pretty much on what might happen. So if you can't really relax because you're so vigilant about those problems, you really aren't noticing the possibilities. So that's what we focused on.
So what about the aspect of political nature of the news today? So wouldn't the left-wing media be proposing different solutions than the right-wing media would be talking about? And don't we already see that when they do discuss solutions or possibilities, that they're often at odds?
they hold different frames trying to look at the world, but they're both fear-driven. So it's different frames, but still driven both by this negativity bias. And so we're really not getting news that's about, where is the news that's about creative possibilities? And that's what we're saying. It's really pretty much absent. And when it shows up as what people would often think is the feel-better news, not the getting better news. So this rose-colored glasses, false belief of what we're talking about, that's not what we're saying. We're saying, in fact, that constructive media, and we'll be talking about two different types, is very much about both engaging each other, and we'll talk about the social crisis that we're also in related to that, and then also really about not just being about problems, but problems should lead, in fact, to thinking about solutions. We're suggesting that people are not passive and they're certainly not apathetic. They just don't see what to do about what they're hearing about. They don't understand because they're getting so many problems that they're presented with. And the news isn't about, well, here's an action you could take to make a difference, or here's three actions we could all be taking. We're looking for that to be added to those stories and not just more about the problems.
So I think I know what you're going to say next, but just to play devil's advocate for a second, sure. If we're proposing possibilities, aren't we then asking the news to speculate in a certain way that they're telling us what will solve the problems?
I think that's a great question. I think that there's a lot of people that think journalism is about factual coverage only, and we are interested in expanding that a little bit. For me, when I think about what's being covered in the media, I only see a piece of the puzzle. And a lot of our project is really on this idea that the world's problem-solving ability, for example, with all the things that are happening right now, is often underreported and reforms go unrealized. And so part of our constructive media piece was really this idea of expanding what is being covered. And the more we looked, the more we saw so many stories all across the world of people coming together on matters of common interest, people coming together with real strategies and real solutions. So not just ending a story with, oh, this is what's happening, climate change, oh, this happened again, more war, more crime, more tragedy, more human failure, but really not much about what people are actually doing. And the more we saw, the more we realized, wow, people are doing a lot.
So in other words, it isn't even a matter of speculation then per se. A lot of the stories that you all research at San Francisco State University, for example, that become validated independent news with the project and end up every year, several of the stories that come from you all and your students that you work with end up in the top 25. And again, it's been a real significant contribution to Project Censored to break the negativity news cycle. Because we get accustomed to that. Like, well, what are they hiding from us? They're hiding the bad things. What are they hiding from us? They're hiding the bad things. Turns out there's a lot of things that aren't addressed because it seems that that system speaks that language, but then therefore they don't know how to cover a story that you were talking about, right? They don't know how to look at this. And in fact, you all start your chapter out, I'm a sucker for a good epigraph, and you all start with Diane DePrima saying the only war that matters is the war against the imagination. And so we could play with that for quite a while. But that's also the idea, not just of speculating, but using the power of creativity and imagination such that not only can we create different ways of reporting the news and seeing what's going on around us and how we're confronting our collective crises, but it actually suddenly makes us more aware or attuned to the fact that those things are already happening. They're already happening.
And we start perceiving a world that's really mean and dangerous because all we're getting is this problem-focused news. We don't pursue opportunities. We don't look at news as learning opportunities and learning cycles that society is in. And here's the next possibility. So we talk about the fact-based questions, but we could add to those five fact-based questions the how, where, when, and whys to also what might we do about this? And that calls for a very different response, more of a, well, here's how we might do this next time if this were to happen again. So if not, we're really voting for some form of cynicism or disengagement by this constant litany of threats and problems.
Let's get to some more about what we can do about this, and let's also not be guilty of focusing on the negativity and the problem cycle as well. I'd like to remind listeners, however, that you are tuned to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri, and we are speaking with co-authors of a new contribution to Censored 2020, Through the Looking Glass, It is a chapter called Our Collective Crisis in Constructive Journalism, Growing the Good and Possible. We are joined by researchers and co-authors Ken Burrows and Amber Yang. After this brief musical break, we're going to continue our conversation. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we are joined by researchers and authors Ken Burrows and Amber Yang. Amber Yang is a restorative justice and wellness coordinator at Novato High School in Northern California, just above San Francisco. She also has a bachelor's degree in psychology with a minor in holistic health. She's co-author of this chapter that we are now discussing with Ken Burrows, who has been an educator and consultant for more than 30 years. Teaching holistic health studies at San Francisco State University since 1991. He is founder and director of the Holistic Health Learning Center there, a unique interdisciplinary library and community action center at the university. Ken, of course, has been a longtime member of the Media Freedom Foundation working with Project Censored. And we are delighted that Ken and Amber, along with their other colleague who's not here now, Bethany Surface, put together this fantastic and important concluding chapter for our new book, Censored 2020 Through the Looking Glass, that I edited with Andy Lee Roth. The chapter is called Our Collective Crisis and Constructive Journalism, Growing the Good and Possible. And before the break, Amber, Ken, you were talking to us about how the news function and what it is and how we get stuck in these negative news cycles. But we also were looking at the other end of this, and Amber, you started to talk to us a little bit about, well, what is that possible and where are these stories and why don't we see more of this? I did want to touch on one thing because this stood out very dramatically at the beginning of the chapter. And I want to say that when I was teaching this chapter just in the last month, several of the students picked up on this and they were absolutely amazed. And you talk about this right in the beginning. You say medical experts cite loneliness and isolation as the primary public health problem in the United States. You write, this is driven in part by the shallow ties of the digital age, with the average Facebook user having 338 friends, yet feeling more alone than ever. Many are drowning in the business of digital life while isolating themselves through social media and online entertainment. A May 2018 survey of more than 20,000 adults revealed that most Americans are lonely, with 43% reporting that they felt isolated from others, with adults aged 18 to 22, known as Generation Z, comprising the loneliest generation of all. That seems to go against all the PR blitzes we see from social media companies and Instagram and WhatsApp and Snapchat. You're supposed to be on there and in there and you're with your friends and everything in that world always looks snazzy and fun and interesting, except that that's only a snapshot, quite literally. So Ken and Amber, could you talk a little bit to that? And then, of course, we want to get out of that cycle. So we want to talk about the kind of media we need that helps Gen Z and helps the rest of us avoid those addiction cycles. You know, my students were very, I won't say they were surprised. It just spoke to them, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. many of them just started offering confessionals out of left field. This opened up a possibility for all of a sudden they were like, hey, we didn't know this was like a counseling session. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm like, well, it's not per se, but education and learning is a way that we process this stuff. Right. So tell us about this.
Well, this is why we frame it as a threefold crisis, because the social crisis is related very much to both the negative news. And by the way, we've got this idea of negative news overload as one of the primary pieces we think Project Censored should be naming and looking at, along with junk news and news abuse. So that's part of this news crisis, is to really realize that this is a problem. When you've got a recent Harvard School of Public Health poll saying that over a fourth of the people are saying that news itself is their biggest stressor. So just to get that clear in mind, that where's the empowering news that highlights human goodness, creativity, and possibility? Again, lacking that, we don't feel so positive. We feel safer at home. And here's the social media as a comfortable companion. And now we're entertaining ourselves. And this isn't just an individual problem. It's a social problem. We're increasingly unplugging from the social sphere to entertain ourselves in a digital way. And so it's this constant repeating of threats and a world that's unsafe, and I'm safer watching my media and engaging with those that I can identify with, that is isolating us. And it's not a small problem.
And one of your, quote, aerial, quote, friends on social media, right? Maybe not real life friend, right? But but it's really much easier to ignore those people, to delete those people, to unfriend those people, to block those people, i.e. not work through any kind of human interactions when we encounter differences in cognitive dissonance, because we're human beings. That's gonna happen, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Amber, you have a background in psychology. Maybe speak to some of that.
I actually wrote a story for Project Censored about five rights and digital rights for youth, because right now we're looking at a pretty scary statistic that over 50% of all youth have experienced or know someone who's experienced cyberbullying. So the online world isn't really a safe place. And the question of how do we make it a safe, happy, engaging place is a huge one, and something I don't think a lot of us have addressed. And, you know, when it says many are drowning in the busyness of digital life while isolating themselves through social media and online entertainment, I think of online entertainment being that so many people watching TV shows now, I question the role modeling and exampling that entertainment is nowadays. Lots of people really feed off of these dramatic TV shows where people are cussing each other out. None of us are really showing, like, how to actually talk through difficult conversations. How do we navigate that? And so most of the youth I work with are like, have you seen this show? Have you seen this show? And I see a scene and I'm like, wow, like, imagine if that went down in real life. And we really feed off of that. We really find it entertaining to see people like really going at each other and trying to like bite each other's necks off. So that's also what comes up for me. And I think that that really is isolating. And then we carry that into the real world and think, oh, you know what? I'm going to tell this person off because I can. Or I'm not going to talk to that person. And we lose that sense of trust, collective trust.
And I think it's important to keep in mind that this threat awareness leads to this negative news, which supports a cycle of social disengagement and desire to, and weaken citizenship with that, more stress, and that cynicism. So we just don't feel safe in the world, and we feel, again, more safe at home with our media.
It's really interesting because, Amber, you brought up the word engagement and you just brought up the word disengagement. And when I look at digital media right now, I see it as a straight line from engagement to disengagement, meaning a lot of these social platforms, they are tweaking the content you see based on your engagement. You tend to engage more with things that are showing conflict or that get you riled up. And so therefore that negativity bias. And so you engage and you engage and you engage, but then it's also negative that you eventually disengage from the political process and you're only engaged on social media. And a lot of what we see, I think, right now is people who think they're involved in the political process because they're voicing their opinions on social media, but it's never actually translating into real political action. So I guess my question on that front would be, how do we overcome this if the financial models are based around engagement and if engagement is boosted by the negativity bias?
Well, that's, in other words, that's like the wrong kind of engagement. It's kind of like what you've been arguing here,
exactly.
Right? Is that our systems are pushing a counterproductive kind of engagement. Yeah. And subnote on that, just interestingly to put, and this is incredibly baffling, but nonetheless the case, about 40% of people in the United States admit that social media is their primary source of news. Mm-hmm. The conflation, the blurred lines, I think that's confusing for people.
It also leads to lots of drama and the type of news. So we focus in the chapter on the threefold news crisis, and we don't have access to responsible news increasingly. An example, it relates to both this threat focus and also the lack of news we're getting, is climate change. So we're hearing a lot about this great problem. What do we do with this? And basically, we're not geared to deal with future existential threats. The human brain isn't. And when we're getting this negative news that the climate change establishment is saying, 2C max this year, if not, we'll be over, we're done for, we're cooked, literally cooked in global warming. And so we're focused on all this negativity versus here's some action steps we can take that would really move us toward alleviating the climate problem. Let's all get on board. Where's the social good again? Where's the support for news that would really make a difference that we can all buy into? It wouldn't be ambiguous. It would be these action, these creative steps that we could all be passionate about taking action on. That's not showing up on Facebook because we need our experts to be providing that kind of news that's verifiable, solid. Project Drawdown is one of those that's actually done. 100 things we could be doing right now to move us in that direction. It needs to be foregrounded by the news system, by the media systems, but it's not. We're hearing more about the tragedy, what's constantly growing fires. So people feel overwhelmed. So naturally, they're going to turn to entertainment, right? They're going to actually be more disengaged.
Also, when you bring up social media, I think of quick images and snazzy titles. And we're increasingly living in a world of growing complexity. And so when I think about climate change, for example, I can't even think of just one or two things. Like, I question the food system. I question personal choices. I question many things. And so when people get their news from social media, they only get a little piece of the puzzle. And social media and Facebook, and my mom watches news on Facebook, and she's like, I love Facebook news. But when I look at it, it doesn't incorporate the complexity of real social and environmental issues nowadays. And that's very concerning for me.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, the more and more that we're referring to what's happening with the climate as climate crisis, maybe ironically, the news media will get more interested in it because it's crisis centric. And maybe that will also inadvertently tip them to rather covering it as the latest car crash, but it's a planetary crash and we don't have another planet. And so silver linings here, right? Mm-hmm. That at some point, what's going to push the current major corporate model, what's going to push it mm-hmm. into the next evolution? I mean, yeah. It's really spun itself inversely. It's spun mm-hmm. itself in a downward spiral, the mm-hmm. point to where it's literally eating itself,
mm-hmm. yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I talked to Matt Taibbi a few weeks back, and we talked about his new book, Hate Incorporated, mm-hmm. right? And again, what Nolan and I talk about in the United States of Distraction, hyper-partisanship, media-saturated culture, media silos, mm-hmm. You know, a lack of critical thinking and acceptance, reliance on confirmation bias in a post-truth mm-hmm. world. You know, we don't have many. That's not going to lead anywhere mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. And it's self-defeating. Right. And so I'm being wishful in my thinking here mm-hmm. out loud is that at some point, you know, we have seen CNN, New York Times. They've finally agreed just in the past year to stop with the false equivalencies. They finally stopped with the Heartland Institute, Exxon Mobil backed nonsense. I at least see that as a good step. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, we criticize corporate media a lot, mm-hmm. but it is the big game. It's still the big game in town, and it is still where most people get their news. And so we don't want to totally give up on that. So where there's some kind of way to push them into this frame while we're doing these other things, and you mentioned Ken Burrow's drawdown.org, Project Drawdown. It's also important when we can communicate with people in journalism and communicate with people in the corporate media. Why don't you write about Project Drawdown? Why don't you look at this very issue? What we're talking about right now and the focus of your chapter is absolutely fascinating and should be at the core of what journalism departments are doing in the 21st century. So I want to continue talking about that in particular and focus more on you have the integrative news journalism movement, and we want to get into that. I'm Mickey Huff with my co-host Chase Palmieri. You're tuned to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. And we are talking with Ken Burrows and Amber Yang, who, along with Bethany Surface, co-authored this chapter for Censored 2020, Our Collective Crisis in Constructive Journalism, Growing the Good and Possible. After this musical break, we're going to continue growing the good and possible right here at the Project Censored Show. Stay tuned.
Because together we will stand, every boy, girl, woman, and a man.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, our collective crisis and constructive journalism, growing the good and possible. We are joined by co-authors of this chapter for Censored 2020, Amber Yang and Ken Burrows. Their other co-author is Bethany Surface. Ken and Amber are in the studio with us today. Amber Yang is an educator. She is a restorative justice and wellness coordinator at Novato High School. She's also got a degree in psychology from San Francisco State University, is also in graduate school at Sonoma State University. And actually, maybe later in the program here, Amber, maybe we talk a little about what your trajectory is in that program as it maybe relates to some of the things that we've been talking about. Ken Burrows, of course, no stranger to the Project Censored audience. Ken Burrows is a longtime member of the Media Freedom Foundation, overseeing Project Censored, a longtime contributor of our validated independent news program. He is at San Francisco State University, where he leads the Holistic Health Studies program. He has an interdisciplinary library and community action center at the university, and I have been there many times over the years, and I have to tell listeners that it is an absolutely incredible thing that has been built there by Ken and his many students over decades. And so we're speaking right now with people that don't just talk the talk, they walk the walk, and they share with everyone with whom they encounter. And we're really fortunate that today they're sharing with us on the Project Censored Show. So thank you, Ken and Amber, for taking time out to be here to talk to us about these important issues. Chase Palmieri?
Yeah, I had another question about the negativity bias. I wonder how much of it is a result of the 24-hour news cycle. And the reason I bring that up is that now with the 24-hour news cycle, it's the journalist of today's job to pump out as many stories as possible. And when that's what you're doing, it's much easier to report on something that's happened than to do the research you need to do to find out what the solution or the appropriate next steps are. So I wonder how much just laziness and the current modern-day job requirements of the 24-hour news cycle journalists play into the negativity bias.
It's a good question. I think, though, to give it a larger frame, the FCC reported in 2011 that we needed at least 50,000 reporters to adequately cover the news. And we have less than 25,000 in the country now left after the closing of one in five newspapers and consolidation and mergers. So increasingly, especially rural areas in the country aren't getting the news coverage at all. And then the increasingly centralized, whenever power centralizes, it serves itself to some degree. Who even produces the news when you think these days? What is the news with major players of Google and Facebook now and the major companies really being co-producers of news, cross-platform thinking? Where do people turn for news they can trust? So increasingly, there's less people out there reporting. They're overburdened, as you say. Negative news bias affecting all of us. We're just feeling more and more overwhelmed. And when we're more overwhelmed, this is what we're seeing. We need some action steps that inform and fuel our hope so that we can actually be in the world with others and feel safe enough to be connecting, which is partly we don't right now. So that's why we're calling this this triple crisis that we're all swimming in, both news, disconnection socially, and also this imagination is impaired because of the overload of negative news. It's all mounting. It's all additive, if you will.
Even the Penn Center just recently did a study on losing the news about the effects of losing local journalism, and you put it in great stark terms when we're talking about how few journalists there are remaining, how there's six major companies that control 90% of the production of news in the country. As Peter Phillips writes in Giants on the Global Power Elite, he says somewhere upwards of 75 to 80% of stories come from public relations firms and are stenographically reported over the airwaves to suit, again, as you put it, Ken, left to the devices, right? Those that control the culture are just pumping out information that benefits themselves, no matter how toxic or useless it is for the public.
Reclaiming more of that local news coverage is so important, as you were talking about, that access to responsible news is in decline. One in five newspapers have closed over the country. And so a project we found in our research was something called movement journalism. And that's an example of this emerging project in the South that publishes game-changing news stories of people trying to build that collective power and organize together to truly make fundamental shifts in the power dynamics of our society. And so I think that this whole idea of us understanding that six big corporations own most of the media we consume, and how do we really build this idea of local news coverage is a question of mine. And so earlier I wanted to say something because there's a quote that we put in our chapter by Anthony Leibowitz, who's the director of the Yale Project on Climate Change Communication. And he says that the prospect of people disconnecting from news should worry journalists, but the possibility that relentlessly negative news might actually weaken citizenship is even more troubling. And we call this the hope gap, and it's a serious problem. Perceived threat without efficacy of response is usually a recipe for disengagement or fatalism. So many people my age, that millennial generation, are just like, I don't even want to look at the news anymore.
But also, as responsible news sites decline, that means the partisan sites arise and they fill the vacuum of actual news coverage. So you don't know where to go for news because of those declining sites, and the wherewithal of information sources is everywhere. What do you trust? So increasingly weaponized information is showing up, and it's not just at voting time, it's happening all the time. And we're always voting with our choices, and we're being increasingly disinformed and ill-informed because of not knowing what to trust and this decline in responsible news.
Amber Yang, you mentioned movement journalism, and so just pulled up something called ProjectSouth.org. Mm-hmm. That's what you're referring to
that's
right?
Where it is.
Yeah, so definitely always like to share with our listeners the where to goes. And of course, our listeners know about Yes Magazine, and we've talked about Shareable.net. Now we've got this one for everybody to check out, ProjectSouth.org, Drawdown.org, right? Those were two that you had just mentioned here. Is there a couple of other sources, a couple places maybe that you would want to give a shout out to?
First off, I just want to advocate that Yes Magazine is an amazing platform. Something that also stands out to me is the Solutions Journalism Network. They call it The Whole Story, and it's a website you go on there, and they just have this amazing network. There's hundreds of journalists that have pledged to write stories that were more solution-based. So you go on there and there's tons of articles. Actually, a few of our resources from the chapter was from that website. So they have stories like 72 places to find solution story ideas. They have a whole article about the hope gap, and they have a whole article about compassion fatigue. Then they will write these stories of places all around the country that are doing great things.
TheWholeStory.SolutionsJournalism.org is the website that I just pulled up.
Another good one is Shareable.net, looking at the sharing economy. What would a world be like if we really moved beyond money and started sharing?
What would it be if instead of having Les Moonves at CBS bemoaning that Donald Trump is bad for America, but he's damn good for CBS, instead of covering that negative cycle like the dog chasing the tail?
Yeah. If you go on Shareable's site, they talk about, we're focused on solutions that won't be coming through old school thinking.
Right.
Really, we're getting back to community. And this isn't just a nice thing, you know, picnics in the backyard with your neighbors. This is much more than that. They're advising cities on how to create much more of a shareable society. And one of our stories we did fairly recently was how to reduce the impacts of gentrification by opening up the common spaces, the public spaces. And also, how do we start looking at reforming the housing crisis, and there are some really good solutions coming out of Europe and other places, all on a shareable site.
Shareable.net. And so we've talked about that here on the program in years past. I'm looking back through the study that you all did with us, and there's an integrative news and journalism movement where you have an interesting graphic of a tripod with a camera that maybe you want to talk or share a little bit more about. I know you've mentioned some of that. There's also another part here where you talk about the five phases of design process under solutions journalism, focus, innovation. Could you at least introduce some of this to our listeners, give them an idea about this? The part of the chapter is on solutions journalism. And then again, you have these five phases.
The five aspects of engagement journalism.
What does that look like?
We've got these two forms of what we're calling constructive media and constructive journalism. One of them is solutions focused, and one of them is more engagement focused. So the solution focused journalism has a lot to do with both design thinking with innovation theory. So it's really looking at very different ways to think of how we approach what goes in news. If we're not to fixate on problems, then what do we do? Well, this is why design is taking off around the country, is we're now thinking in terms of the complexity of life, which is more systems based. And this is where design thinking goes. But then how do we implement what we come up through design thinking? That's where we turn to innovation theory. So there we focus on the early adopters, the risk takers, the movers and shakers, those that buy in early to trying out a new idea, they get the movement going. So with this awareness in mind, we can begin to see a whole different type of news that could be framed and supported.
Yeah, you know, solutions media is one of the legs that we're working for. And I don't think we mentioned it before, but a core of our work is this tripod. And that's the metaphor where this tripod is three-legged and it holds up a camera. And this camera represents how we see the world. And so the middle one is critical journalism. And I do want to just say a little bit about critical journalism, because some of the feedback we've gotten since we've presented this is like, oh, so, you know, critical media is so important. We really need to be focused on the problems as well. And it's actually the center leg. This is what holds us together. Because without critical media, how can we examine the power inequalities, the accountability, the fairness, justice piece? How can we even begin to look at solutions if we don't even know the problem? So critical media is at the core of our work. And so a lot of our chapter is about that critical media literacy piece, about examining our own media diet, examining what's in the frame, how it got there, what's left out, who produces the media we experience, like all the classic questions.
So there's two other legs on the tripod for the three legs. I just want to remind listeners that you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with Chase Palmieri. We're speaking with Ken Burrows and Amber Yang, co-authors, along with Bethany Surface, of a chapter for the Censored 2020 book. The chapter is titled, Our Collective Crisis and Constructive Journalism, Growing the Good Impossible. After this final musical break, we're going to come back, Amber Yang, and we're going to let you finish the tripod, because we need more than one leg. We need to get to the other two to hold up that camera. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. This is the final segment of today's program. We have been speaking for the hour with researchers and authors Ken Burrows and Amber Yang. Ken Burrows, again, has been an educator and consultant for more than 30 years, teaching holistic health studies at San Francisco State University since 1991. He's the founder and director of the Holistic Health Learning Center at San Francisco State. Amber Yang has a bachelor's degree in psychology from San Francisco State University, was co-president of the Project Censored chapter there, as a longtime contributor and researcher. Amber Yang, before the break, you were talking about this very, very important visual that you have in the chapter, that's this tripod, right? And you're talking about how the center leg was critical media, right? The critical media that's holding up that camera. But there are two other very important legs, because you need three of them to hold up the lens. So please continue with that description.
So the middle leg was the critical journalism leg, the critical media leg. So really being informed about threats and public concerns. And so the other two legs are solutions journalism and engagement journalism. And these two are part of a larger topic of what we call constructive journalism, which is really about informing about creative possibilities, reinventing outdated narratives, and catalyzing collaboration and common good. And so when we talk about solutions journalism, which is where we mentioned design thinking, innovation theory, it's this whole idea of how do we talk about and create systemic strategies that empower communities, individuals, shift public discourse, and address social challenges, knowing that seeing problems isn't enough, and the world's problem-solving ability is often underreported. So there was this amazing study we found by the Institute for Applied Positive Research, and they did a survey of struggling communities across Detroit. And what they did is that they started implementing lots of solutions reporting. And they found that news readers' problem-solving skills increased by 20%. The readers in the study who focused on solution also reported feeling more energized, less anxious, more connected to community, and more confident that their city was improving. And what I love about this is that it's not just saying like solutions journalism. It's not saying that that's separate from critical journalism. I think that there's a way to apply solutions thinking into critical issues. So We talk about what would it be like if we ended a story with open questions or ideas about learning curves or visions for the future, even if it's critical news focused. So that's one of the legs we have. And then the other leg is what we call engagement media. John A. Powell, who's the director for the Haas Institute for a Fair and Inclusive Society, he was on KPFA recently and he was asked, what gives you hope? And he was like, well, I don't organize around hope. I don't organize around despair. I actually organize to engage. And he was talking about this idea that we're not even engaging. So maybe it's not always about finding solutions. And maybe it's not always focusing on what's going wrong and what we need to pay attention to. We also have this idea that through engagement media, we can actually build a container that supports social connection and that actually highlights news stories and media of people coming together on matters of common interest that in the hopes would build collective efficacy. So in a 15-year study, this man named Felton Earls, the Harvard professor of public health, surveyed struggling neighborhoods across Chicago. And what he found was that the top factor to well-being individually and community-wise was not wealth or access to healthcare or low crime levels. It was actually collective efficacy. So this was the capacity of people to come together on matters of common interest. And that was the top protective factor. So this leg is really about building a narrative of belonging and bridging differences. And so we created these 5 engagement tools that actually can bring out that engagement media.
This is a great time to get into that in the engagement journalism focus and the greater good. Mm-hmm. You've got a great quote from the wonderful Doug Rushkoff that kicks mm-hmm. that off. And Rushkoff mm-hmm. writes, "It's time we reassert the human agenda, and we must do so together, not as the individual players we have been led to imagine ourselves to be, but as the team we actually are, Team Human." So that leads us in here, and then you all give us 5 specific things mm-hmm. to really not just think about, but to embrace, embody, and do. These are verbs.
To name the 5 tools, yeah. but also just to acknowledge what comes to mind is Peter Block. He said, if problems are everywhere, if they proliferate, it's because we lack community. It does heal the social isolation, but it's its own value. We can create our own news. If we're inspired by something, it's going to lead us in the direction of, I'm also thinking of the old town crier used to walk mm-hmm. around and all is well, the community wouldn't come out and do anything, right? But if things are not well, then the community Ooh. Would grab a hoe or something to come on out, all participate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Chase the thief off or whatever it may be. We're not somehow involved in the common good right now. And so these 5 tools help us reconnect.
Well, let's hear them.
So the first is meditation and mindful inquiry. And when we say connect and engage, we're talking about connecting with ourselves as well as with each other. So it's this idea of really becoming more mindful, more aware of I have choices, I can regulate my own behavior here, and really doing this collectively, finding times to ritualize an event. Let's all take a minute for silence for the person just passed or whatever it may be. We acknowledge common good but through the collective experience of engaging around mm-hmm. a mindful moment. But also we have to use public spaces and to really call on the commons to recognize what we hold in common, collective gathering to really, and we've got news articles for each of these that maybe Amber could speak to after I run through them quickly.
Public space and collective gathering.
Power of the arts, mm-hmm. the power of play and humor, and then storytelling, symbol, and metaphor. Most of us is unconscious. Only 2% of our thinking apparatus through our nervous system and our brain do we have actually to access conscious thought. So 98% of our nervous system and brain are working at levels below consciousness. And so when we get to the stories break through some of the barriers of our simplicity, and we begin to recognize our humanity when we start creating stories rather than just the wrongs and rights of our dualistic thought.
Chase, I was looking at the conclusion of the chapter that you both wrote along with Bethany Surface, and the first sentence really jumped out to me as a way of concluding our conversation today so far. It says, a crisis occurs when the old world isn't working and the new one hasn't been born yet. What this made me think about in regards to the negativity bias is that, well, for hundreds of thousands of years, the negativity bias has been humans' arguably most important asset for survival. But we're arguing now on the show that we need to break free of that negativity bias to really stand a chance of surviving and living with hope into the future.
Yeah. Amber, can you speak to that? And also, again, we mentioned earlier and didn't get into this, right? But you're in grad school now. And so I was curious as to how the trajectory of the what you're doing in restorative justice as a wellness coordinator at high school, your psychology background, your involvement in constructive media journalism, and these kinds of things. How, again, does all this line up?
That's a big question. Chase, I love that you brought that out because the next sentence goes, this new world will not be created by old thinking and strategies, but rather by how we make meaning of our human condition and the greater good as it emerges. So when I think about my future and what I'm doing in grad school and what I'm doing at the high school I work at, I really like to focus on that engagement piece. And I think that'd be a good time to finish really quickly just the rest of the engagement tools that we did in. We talked about public space, meditation and mindful inquiry. And the next one is the power of the arts. How do the arts play into social change? And the power of play and humor as another tool, and storytelling, symbol, and metaphor. So when I look at all these tools, which we can go into each of them for a whole radio show within itself, that this whole idea of creating a participatory community that people actually feel like they can make a difference in their communities and they can actually take action and take action on the changes they want to see in themselves and their community. So it really emphasizes collective power and the common good. And so when I think about my future, I really think of creating communities in which we're generating our own changes. So I see a future where I'm helping implement worker-owned co-ops, more public banking, more grassroots organizing. And what I'm doing with the students I work with now with restorative practices, it's all about empowering them. It's all about helping them start engaging with themselves around the changes they want to see. So I like it here. I just saw this. We're trying to build a culture where we're actively participating as opposed to spectating or letting other people decide for us. So that's a huge piece of the engagement.
Of course, you also talk about the power of play and humor and then back to storytelling, symbol, and metaphor. So you want to, yeah, we've got a couple of minutes left. I know that's not enough time to get into these. Amber, you rightfully just suggested, and we'll take you up on this. We could do entire shows on each of these things because you do run through examples and you really give people more to think about. And one of the things we do at the Project Censored Show is we give a platform for big ideas and then we hope people will go and go get into the weeds on it and go pick up the chapter and really read this stuff and come out and hear you speak and get involved in maybe some workshops. I mean, this is great workshop material. You could do a whole day right on this kind of thing. And I know in the spring, Ken Burrows, you often do things at San Francisco State. So we'll definitely keep people apprised of that. But if you could wrap up the last two of these maybe, or just give some ideas about play and humor and storytelling, just to sort of round out the chapter for people.
Sure. Also, just to think of learning happens most outside our comfort zone. It happens in moments of uncertainty. So the barrier that normally protects our sense of self and the world is breached in some way. So I think we're in such a moment in time. So it's when we're looking around, even though we might not know we are, when the arts can really speak to us. You know, language is so limited. So storytelling and the arts, I think, have a unique way of grabbing us and helping us recognize that we're in this thing collectively.
Yeah, and humor is a great coping tool.
Oh, my gosh, right?
So many investigative comedy, right? You know, not just from George Carlin, but Lee Camp, right? The idea of laughing at ourselves as a sort of a cathartic way of getting it out.
It's so important to have humor in the mix. Yeah.
Right.
I realize that in our whole time, we haven't really talked about real stories. And so part of me wants to go off on that. You know, when I think about those engagement tools, I think of this global movement called Disco Soup, where people are really trying to take action on food waste. So there's these soup events all over where they're seeing hundreds of kilos of unused vegetables from markets, bakeries, farms, and restaurants. And it's actually turned into this huge soup free of charge. And everyone can just come, and it becomes this creative, collaborative, and celebratory approach to addressing the global issue of food waste. So that's one example.
Give us another one.
We found this really cool story about how the jazz movement actually helped fuel the civil rights movement. Back the day, it was very rare to see all races coming together in a room. And when jazz started happening, it was naturally occurring that people would just be in a room of all different skin colors. And it became a norm. And so this whole idea of art and music being one of them, actually helping engage people to see beyond our differences. And something I wrote 2 years ago was about internet co-ops. And so in the net neutrality rollbacks back in 2017, communities across the country decided to build their own internet. Indian tribal reservations in San Diego, Michigan, and in Detroit, where back then 40% of the people didn't have access to internet of any kind. So communities were coming together and building their own internet, neighbors teaching neighbors, creating shared emergency forums. And that sense that, you know, what you said about community generated news, community generated action is a core of our work.
Well, and there's a lot more in the chapter. If you go to projectcensored.org, you'll see where we're going to be speaking and what we have going on next. We have a new film out as well, coming out soon on fake news and critical media literacy education. And this is a fantastic accompaniment to all of that, where you can easily see having a whole day workshop talking about that tripod and all these ideas and inviting more people in. Amber Yang, Ken Burrows, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. And the work that you have done that we were talking about today is called Our Collective Crisis and Constructive Journalism: Growing the Good and Possible. And again, you leave us with these words when you write: constructive journalism, that is the combined strength of solutions journalism and engagement journalism alongside critical journalism, reminds us that the facts are not enough. We are just awakening to the profound significance of the creative process that is driving evolution and the emerging role of possibility journalism in leading this revolution. Ken and Amber, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
And thanks so much for your work. We look forward to having you back and continuing the conversation.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own my special interest groups that fund their campaign.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program with myself, Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and Dennis Murphy is our associate producer. The Project Censored Show airs on over 50 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archived programs, just go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to subscribe to The Project Censored Show on YouTube and your cell phone's podcast app. Feel free to share your feedback about our work, and last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons filled with capacity citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love with the brothers in us.